Welcome to The Dish, Reel to Meal, an action movie review podcast where your hosts don't know too much about movies or food, but we try to bring both to you in a digestible way. I'm one of your hosts, Mitch.
I'm the other host, Zachary.
And we have a third host today.
Hey, I'm Jim, the third host.
Welcome to the pod, Jim.
Pleasure to be here. Long time, first time.
Long time listener, first time host.
Yeah.
Jim is a good friend of Zach and I's, or whatever the grammar is for that. Zach and mine?
My and Zach's.
Jim is a good friend of ours. I've known Jim since middle school, I believe. We met in concert band in middle school. Jim's a tuba player, or was a tuba player.
Correct.
I like to think you're still a tuba player, like just practicing in your room.
No, not in, like 15 years.
Nice. Like your lips have not touched the mouthpiece of a tuba in 15 years?
No, they have not.
Do you still have a tuba?
Oh, God, no. I never owned a tuba.
Oh, it was like a rental or something?
They're big, expensive instruments. Generally, the school has them. Zach, you were a trumpet, right?
Wow, I just got to acknowledge the fact that we all just took a very synchronous drink of beer like we were in King of the Hill or something.
It was like, yeah, we just realized we're all band kids. Swig.
Let's drink away the trauma.
And Mitch, you were a trumpet player as well.
I was a trumpet player. Not a great one.
All brass. I was an awful tuba player.
Well, yeah. Weren't you pretty good? Weren't you like somewhere high?
Oh, I was the section leader.
Oh, wow.
Made it all the way to the top.
It's just a great early life example of how your skill doesn't matter to be put in a leadership position. No offense, Jim.
Oh, no, it's fine. I don't know if you remember, and I don't want to call him out, but the original section leader got suspended for snorting OxyContin in the bathroom. And that's how I made
nice.
Slid my way to the top after that.
Similar ascension to many other leaders in this world.
Plot twist. Jim put the OxyContin there.
Jim, did you frame JT?
Oh, God.
I was trying not to say his name. Yeah.
Don't worry. I don't think JT Rose is going to listen to our stupid.
He's going to be the first one, man.
If he does, I hope he sends us an email at dishingthroughdecades@gmail.com and tells us how unhappy he is about
one review, and it's going to be one star.
Hey, Mitch, I just got a marketing idea. Send info about this guy to like a news story or whatever. They publish it about the dish.
You were saying you used to be a trumpet player though, right, Zach?
In middle school. It didn't follow me to high school.
Oh, you're like John.
Oh, was he too cool for trumpet?
He was too cool for high school band. Yeah.
He was a real piece of shit.
The plot twist there is that we as the band kids were widely accepted, our little clique was, in high school. I don't think anyone had any problem with us. No one thought we were cool. There was no threat of that.
But oh, no, we were the big men on campus.
No one fucked with us. Actually, nobody fucked with us, which was nice. But it wasn't because we were intimidating. So, Jim, I can see in the background of your room a Wild Wild West poster, I'm pretty sure.
That is correct. Yeah, this is my man cave, and I have a poster of the 1999 classic Wild Wild West hanging up there.
Is that the only movie poster you have hung up in there?
Yeah, it's the only movie poster I have, and it's the only poster at the moment. I got a poster of, it's like all these mafia people, like the Sopranos and the Goodfellas, and they're all hanging out at a table smoking cigars. I haven't framed yet, but it's going on the wall soon. And I have dogs playing poker too, but it's not really a poster, it's a painting.
Gotta love dogs playing poker.
Over here on the wall to my right.
Jim. Dude, it's good to see you. I actually just realized we haven't like seen each other in quite a while. Thanks for coming on, man.
No, it's my pleasure. This is like my event for the month, probably.
Oh, God. Yeah. This is the event? Yeah. Like, we start recording at 10:30 at night?
So I don't know that we've said this on the record, on pod, but and Jim, I don't know if you want to have this be known on pod, but you recently had a baby, hence why you're...
Correct, yeah.
Your events are few and far between.
Yeah, and that's why we're starting so late. She was a little fussy tonight, and I had to kind of rock her a little bit after feeding her. But she's good. She's sleeping. I've got an eye on her on my phone. And my wife, Patricia, is downstairs if anything goes wrong.
How old is Sophie now?
She is 4 months and a week.
Oh, man. That's quite young.
Very young. And we're very proud of her, too. She's very intelligent, very charismatic already.
That's awesome. And I'm completely unsurprised.
Yeah. Very proud of her. And I told her that I had to go and do this podcast because it was very important, obviously. if anything, God forbid, ever happened to me where I, you know, a car accident, cancer, any kind of fatal accident happened to me, I want to leave a legacy for her. And I believe this podcast will be my best bet.
Oh, man, don't put all your eggs in one basket there, Jim. Wow, I've never felt more pressure than right now.
Our podcast is a far reach, and we can only hope that it has the impact that you're hoping for today.
Well, I'm at least glad to know we'll get an extra fan in like 18 years or so.
No, she can start listening to podcasts.
I would recommend she wait until she's at least 16.
Well, Jim, you have intelligence and charisma in spades, so I'm unsurprised, as your wife does as well. So she's gonna be an awesome kid, man. I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah, I hope to see y'all later this year. Maybe I don't think if I go to that beach trip that I'll be bringing Sophie. It'll probably just be me. But hopefully, at some point.
Imagine you showing up like Mr. Mom, like backpack and like a bottle bandolier and. Yeah.
I'll be back in North Carolina someday. Maybe in a couple of years or 4 years or something like that. Who knows?
So I hear, man. That's really exciting. So, well, I have Will Smith and Kevin Kline staring me down from one of the worst movie cover arts I've ever seen to my right here. Should we perhaps... Oh, and I can also see it in your background there, Jamie. Yeah. That one is arguably way better. If you look up the Wild Wild West cover art, it is atrocious.
I'm gonna do that right now.
If you see metal backdrop, you know you found the right one.
Yeah. Oh, I think I've seen that. I think that was also the cover to the video game Wild Wild West. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Actually, I think the video game is just that without the spider or Will Smith or Kevin Kline. It's just the metal W.
What?
I had a
console.
I think it was just for PC.
Oh, man.
I had high hopes of like researching the video game, watching the movie before this podcast, coming up with like funny, let's just keep going.
Oh, you're good. I think this is our first episode where we'll have one person who has not watched the movie in recent history or recent past. So
I've watched it within the last 7 years at some time, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
So that might not be a handicap depending on. Some people have great like photographic movie memory. I am not one of those people. Do you feel like you're that way, Jim?
No, not at all. But I've seen it more than once. I feel like I've seen it at least 3 times. And I had friends back in college who would recite the scene between Will Smith's character, James West, and Kenneth Branagh's character, General Lovelace, where they make those racial and ableist insults at each other, and they all kind of play on words.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that scene very well. And I remember the intro pretty well. I remember the spider. I remember the general gist of the story. So I think I know everything I need to know.
Okay. All right.
Nice.
Well, let's get into it. I'm really ready to dish about this shit with you guys.
Likewise. So our pod has, Jim, I don't know if you've heard like the kind of update and gear shift that we've had, but we've kind of shifted from kind of heavy, dense plot recap to like a little bit more of a fluid, like we start off with a really quick, like one paragraph recap and then just like bounce around, just discuss scenes that we thought were fun or whatever.
Yeah, Mitch told me that, but I think for Wild Wild West, it's worth it to really just slow it down, get into every minute detail. So maybe we need to do a flashback episode and go back to the old format.
I want every scene of this glorious movie in gory, gory detail. So yeah, we're calling that the deep fried recap. And I hear, Zach, you have come up with something. But before we get your deep fried recap, I'll just read a couple of the ones from popular media sites. I've got three here. I've got IMDb, HBO Max, and Amazon Prime. Currently, you can watch as of 5/21/22. You can watch Wild Wild West on HBO Max. You can rent it on Amazon Prime or YouTube for like $2.99, I think.
Fair price.
So I'm going to read you all the IMDb description first, and then I'm going to give you the Amazon Prime because it's just, it's funny because there's a typo.
Okay.
So IMDb says, the two best special agents in the Wild West must save President Grant from the clutches of a diabolical, wheelchair-bound, steampunk-savvy Confederate scientist bent on revenge for losing the Civil War. That one's pretty great. I had actually never read that one before.
Well, that's short and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Concise but accurate.
Amazon Prime says, Will Smith, Kevin Kline, and Salma Hayek is on a perilous assignment. Stop Dr. Arliss Lovelace and his contraption-driven plot to establish a disunited States of America.
I prefer the former of those.
Same.
Agreed.
Was that first recap, the first plot summary, was that a one-sentencer?
That is a one-sentencer.
Wow. That is efficiency.
It is one sentence and 31 words.
Jesus. If only I could be that efficient in all other facets of my life.
Hey, man, I've seen some of your, like, graph making and shit. You're pretty, got some organization going on. So, my favorite fact about this movie is that Will Smith turned down the role of Neo from The Matrix, also filmed in 1999, to play Jim West in the arguably terrible remake, or not even remake, it's just like a loosely based on the 60s television series Wild Wild West.
And they were sued for it, apparently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The creator sued the, I think, producer, whoever, like, brought forward the script to make the movie.
Yeah. I think it was the writer, or, like, the original creator of the Wild Wild West TV series, yeah.
Yeah, if I recall, it was the person who had the idea for the original Wild Wild West TV show wasn't really credited as such, because I think at that time the producers of the TV show could just say, ah, this was my idea, and they wouldn't have any recourse to stop it. But then, closer to the release of the movie, that writer was just like, hey, I actually thought of it, so I'm going to sue you. And I think he got money, or maybe he didn't.
Nice.
I don't recall.
No,
that
I think
part.
You're right. I seem to remember him getting like quite a bit of money, in fact. Yeah, between $600,000 and $1.5 million he got from...
Yeah, I think Warner Brothers.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, in any event, it seems like they pretty much, I don't know if plagiarize is the right word here, but used his content without his consent, which is kind of fucked up.
And on the flip side of that, one of the reasons I believe this movie did so poorly is because the original screenplay was like absolutely sliced and diced and reworked to the point that the writers of the original screenplay didn't want anything to do with it. And the studio said too bad and kept their names on it. And they have since never worked with a major studio because they were so put off by that experience. And to this day, if you look up Wild Wild West, their names are still on it. So I think they maybe were the scapegoats for Warner Brothers for this terrible movie that they made. We're kind of already roasting it, I'm realizing.
Well, with that in mind, I can do my recap. And then, like last time, maybe we can get into the do you like portion. And then we can kind of just freewheel it.
Yeah, dude.
What do you say?
Let's hear it, Zach. I'd love to hear your deep fried recap of Wild Wild West.
Okay. It's not one sentence, but it's not very long either.
That's fine.
Okay. Here we go. In a world. Wouldn't it be terrible if I had the whole thing like that? Okay.
I think just do it.
I would probably not have a voice the rest of the pod. I will refrain. In a world without physics, but with steampunk technology, colloquially referred to as Louisiana in 1869, a pretty nice year, a conservative Confederate sympathizer, Dr. Arliss Lovelace, shows off his cross-functional technical project management skills by kidnapping the world's most eminent scientists, metallurgists, hydraulic engineers, and chemists to enact his plot to overthrow the Union government. Unfortunately for him, President Ulysses S. Grant, played by Kevin Kline, commissioned the dysfunctional buddy cop duo of Jim West, played by Will Smith, and U.S. Marshal Artemis Gordon, also played by Kevin Kline. West and Gordon sweep the legs of Dr. Lovelace's plan and are constantly one step ahead thanks to several intelligence gathering missions. It turns out that Dr. Lovelace has an 80-foot mechanical spider that he rides around in like a steampunk Zoid. Dr. Lovelace utilizes the spider Zoid to capture President Grant, ultimately setting up the stage for Will Smith to activate his flamethrower titties like a James Bond villain fembot. Weston Gordon managed to board the giant spider, engage Dr. Lovelace's final spider form, save the president, kill the bad guy, and ride the spider off into the sunset. There you have it.
That was nice. I liked that. It went from like action preview to synopsis, I feel like, but it was great.
Yeah, I started off very high level with Dr. Lovelace and then kind of got a little more in the weeds.
Hey, do you guys want to hear my deep fried recap?
Go for it.
My deep fried take.
It's I thought you didn't have one.
It's two sentences.
Oh, okay.
A man with no legs grossly overcompensates. Two talented yet egotistical men fighting over a married woman try to stop him. That's it.
Beautiful.
Well, Will Smith summarized the movie pretty well in his classic song, Wild Wild West, featuring, who is it, Drew Hill and someone else. How's it go?
Wiki Wow.
Yeah,
wow,
Wiki Wow 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 West.
Wiki Wow Wow West. James West, West Desperado, Desperado.
Rough Rider, No You Don't Want Nada. None of this. It's getting tough now.
Wow, Jim, that's more than I would have ever expected.
I think, and then.
Color me impressed. I actually really like the song.
Yeah, me too.
With Artemis from the start of this, ahead of the game, I think. What else?
We can just take all these little bits and supercut them into
just
like,
edit them
the
into
whole...
order. I'll put out every lyric and you'll have to stitch it together.
I'll put it over top of the original audio for that song.
Buffalo Soldier, Look It's Like I Told You. I know there's a reference to Lovelace in there too. It's tough.
Man, maybe if you'd watch the movie.
I wanted to watch the movie. Maybe if you had let me know well enough in advance, Mitch, I could have done all.
Okay,
I could have researched. Touché, the video game, the production, the soundtrack.
Man, we would have maybe produced a better pod if that had happened, and I apologize. It was really on me for forgetting that you had mentioned to do Wild Wild West until the day before we recorded. So my apologies.
And I have one interesting, I don't know if you can even call this trivia because I don't really remember it too well, but I read an article maybe a decade ago, one of the producers for this movie had been trying to put a giant robotic spider in a film for, I think this was like his fifth attempt, and he finally got it. It was like a
wasn't it
lifelong passion.
Wasn't it Kevin Smith?
No. Was he?
Like, I think it was Kevin Smith?
Yeah, I don't think Kevin Smith was involved with this.
He wasn't involved with this, but he worked with a dude who was.
Okay.
And Kevin Smith, Giant Spider, never made it into like the Superman movie that
exactly.
He was working on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's right. I know this was tied to the Nick Cage Superman in some way. Yeah. I think that might have been one of the movies this guy was trying to put. He was trying to put the spider in the Superman. That movie got canceled, I think, because of Batman and Robin flopping.
But it is the Kevin Smith, as in the Kevin Smith of Jay and Silent Bob.
That is correct. Yeah. It's the same Kevin Smith. Yeah, Silent Bob himself.
And yeah, I think he commented that, oh, it's interesting that that dude, who was it? Peter Seaman, I think, was the guy who did
Great
the giant
name.
Spider.
Dick Seaman.
Seaman's another word for cum.
It sure is, Jim.
Oh, Dick man. Cum. Peter Seaman.
I do. Man. It's from the same era of South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, which I just realized is could be talking about a penis.
Hey, you know a little something about that, huh, Mitch?
Yeah, I do, Jim. As an uncircumcised male, I sure do. The last time I watched this movie, I had to be like less than 15 years old. I think I first saw it when I was 10 or 11. And the Fembot titties. That was the, like, going off the deep end. Okay, the movie is officially terrible. Realization point for me.
I can go next. I feel like we both know Jim's thoughts, given that he has one movie poster and it's Wild Wild West. I actually loved it.
Yeah.
I really did. No,
definitely loved it.
Like, yes, it had its flaws. There were a lot of plot holy situations, a number of, you know, one-liners that didn't quite land. The physics of so many situations just did not make sense. But I found myself happily looking past it because it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
And I can objectively say, yeah, like, it's not like a critically great movie, but I don't think I would say it's a horrible movie. I feel like it makes up for it in so many ways that I don't know that I could bring myself to say it's a horrible movie.
No.
So
did you see it when you were younger, Zach?
But probably not once again since then. I watched it when I was like 10, and I don't think I watched it ever since. So there was definitely some nostalgia wrapped up in it. A lot of scenes that I kind of barely remembered, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember. Like, one of the things I vividly remember was like him, Will Smith, getting pulled under the train and like facing the train tracks as they're going by or whatever. Mm-hmm. Random scenes I remembered, but I didn't remember a lot of the plot.
Jim, what about you, man? I want to hear Jim's take on this movie.
I think it's a classic. It's perhaps my favorite 90s action film. It's not necessarily a perfect movie, but I think it gives you everything you need. And I know it was a very expensive movie to make, and I think it made back its budget barely, but it was considered like a huge flop. And I think the fault for that lies in the audiences not being committed enough to the vision of Wild Wild West. We let the Wild Wild West franchise down, not the other way around.
You're right, Jim. So I was looking into the budget. This was a $170 million movie. To put that into perspective.
Is that large?
Yeah, how much was Titanic?
Just as an example of another film, filmed the same year, The Matrix, $63
million. Okay. Wow. Wow.
Titanic's budget, $200 million.
Okay. But,
so this is just under the budget of Titanic, relatively so. It grossed $113.8 million in America, and then it made the rest back overseas. So overall, I think it grossed a little over $200 million, and I think it's joked about that the only reason it did is because people would buy, kids specifically, 13 to 17, would purchase tickets for Wild Wild West, and then they'd go sneak into like the South Park movie instead.
I was ready for the movie. Like, I was mentally prepared to watch a bad movie. Like, I don't know if it's bad, you know, form, but I've like look up the rating before I watch the movie, typically. And it has like a 4 on IMDb or something abysmal like 4. That.
4.9.
And it started off pretty strong. Like, it had a very James Bondy intro. Felt like there were a number of kind of James Bond tropes throughout. So I think that's that they were maybe kind of going for it. But started off really strong. There were a couple of moments where it lulled. But overall, like, I felt like it was a really strong, like, for your typical kind of weak story but strong action movie with like comedy injected, it checked all the boxes. It was really fun from that standpoint.
Yeah, dude, I can't agree more. It was so much fun throughout, and that's why I will love it despite the fact that it's a terrible movie. And in doing the research too, I never realized this, but originally it was written as a like darker mystery western, and it's interesting to think about what that would have been like and if it would have done better. I honestly don't know. With the same cast, I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt it. Would it have been the same director too? Like, was the director and the same cast attached, and then they just had like a big script rewrite, or was this like some very early rough draft? I don't know if you know.
I think it was probably more of an early rough draft situation. Okay. I know that there were more actors that were tied to it and then not tied to it. Like Mel Gibson, for example, was going to be James West, and then Tom Cruise was going to be James West.
Oh my God.
But he ended up going and doing Mission Impossible instead. Arguably a good career move.
Turns out 99 was a pivotal year.
Right?
Will Smith was choosing between Wild Wild West and the Matrix series. Tom Cruise choosing between this and Mission Impossible series.
Mm-hmm.
Definitive year for film.
I wonder what Mel Gibson did in 99.
Fucking got drunk and drove.
He was in a movie called Payback.
Patriot was probably around then too. I think it came out like 2000.
Right. Yeah, 2000.
Which I can really imagine somebody propositioning Mel Gibson for Wild Wild West, but him also like weighing the Patriot and be like, no question. I'm doing the Patriot.
Do you guys think this is a buddy cop movie?
It has a lot of the same tropes of like a lot of buddy cop movies, because they're all kind of like odd couples. Like this one, you have Will Smith, who's like the cool jock, and then Kevin Kline's like the nerd. And they don't get along at first, but somehow they make it work.
Totally. I wouldn't say it's a buddy cop genre, but buddy cop could be a hashtag.
Yeah, it's like a minor genre for it.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely like the dysfunctional kind of like personalities that don't mesh but end up becoming like kind of strange friends by the end.
Yeah, peanut butter and jelly.
It is super fun, man. Like looking through a lot of the stuff I wrote down, like it starts with a sex scene and cross-dressing like within the first 5 minutes. And it didn't really get to the sex, but you know, it was a very sexual situation, we'll say. And then again, within like the first 5 minutes, you get that action.
Yeah, there's the cold opening with that scientist running away. You just see like the shots of the blade chasing after him. He's running for his life with that stupid thing around his neck. And then he ends up dying. And then Ted Levine comes over. What's his name? Bloodbath McGrath, which is a pretty great name. And he says I thought you scientists were supposed to be smart. And then it cuts to the like intro credits.
The intro credits, I remember I commented to Katie because she watched it with me. I was like, God, this music is terrible.
Yeah, it didn't seem to match the mood of the film either. Like the intro credits.
And it was like very James Bond-esque with the intro visuals as well.
Yeah.
You know, lots of color templates and silhouettes and slow motion and women.
He introduced himself at least once in the James Bond form, where he goes, it was Miss East, Loveless assistant, who's like,
what a terribly clever costume, Mr.
West. Jim West.
Very James Bondy.
What did y'all think of Kevin Kline in drag?
I thought it was Dan Aykroyd at first. Very obviously a dude, though. I mean, I think it was meant to look that way, but he played it really well. I thought he was hilarious.
Dude, I loved it. I loved it so much. Kevin Kline's one of my favorite actors. He's in a lot of movies that I like. Specifically, A Fish Called Wanda. I love his role in that. He plays Otto, like the kind of bumbling idiot American hitman. I love him in anything he's in. I think he's an excellent actor. But he also doesn't take himself too seriously, like taking on roles such as this one.
I don't know that I've ever known him before. I may have seen a movie he was in, but he was great. I liked him a lot. Here's a general question. What was the most... There were a lot of these scenes that I remember kind of like raising an eyebrow at and not rolling my eyes too much because I was having too much fun, but a lot of scenes that were just like very unbelievable and like either defied the laws of physics completely or it was just way over the top. What was the scene that... physically, scientifically, whatever, just made the least sense to you?
Are you looking for like a scene that I physically cringed over, or
sure?
Because I can give you one of those.
Yeah.
I have a cringe scene and I have a physics scene. Okay, the physics of the collars, whenever they like reverse the polarity by accident, it was kind of like a really moment. Just it didn't make any sense. But it was also really fun, so I wasn't complaining.
And that would be my belt buckle.
So that would be my like my physics scene that I was annoyed by. But the cringe scene for me was whenever they're at like the spider Nazi party convention going on, you know, and Will Smith shows up in the belly dancer outfit, right before that happened, I remembered it was about to happen because I'd completely forgotten about that scene entirely. Loveless has a full band like there in this venue where he's showing off his diabolical plans. And the band starts playing the music. I just imagine Will Smith walking up to the band and be like, hey, I need something like sensual and Arabic. and then entering. And God, it was very cringeworthy.
That was
also super fun.
That was maybe my favorite scene in the movie.
Was it really?
Specifically,
I can just imagine you laughing your ass off.
Oh my God, the flamethrower titties. Like, where they were just out of control and he was aiming them at. It was, yeah, so out of control and off the wall.
Jim, what about you, man?
What about me, what?
Can you, with having not seen the movie in like 7 years, can you recall a...
I don't think I dwelled too much on the physics or the practicality of a lot of it. I was just strapped in and ready for the ride. I was willing to suspend my disbelief a little bit.
Do you, having not seen it in 7 years, remember all the cool like steampunk shit?
I remember
like the train.
I remember the train. I remember like the steampunk cyborgs at the end, Mr. Knife Guy, the other guys. Mm-hmm. What else is there? I remember some of Artemis's gadgets. The spider, of course. No one can ever forget the spider, having seen the film.
Dr. Loveless's wheelchair.
Dr. Loveless's little, walking wheelchair. But yeah, I just accepted it. I just was just like, it's steampunk.
But like, his line when he activated the four legs killed me. Wins him ableist combat, but like, well, you'll never have two legs like me. And he's like, you'd never played poker?
Four of a kind always beats a pair.
Oh my God, it's pure gold right there.
Yeah, the one for me that, well, you reminded me, Mitch, with the little magnetic collar things.
Mm-hmm.
What really like tripped my wire there was when they were walking and they got within, I guess, like range, so to speak, of the secret railroad, and all of a sudden it's just dragging his body. It goes from no force to like maximum force. Really got me. But the one that this isn't as much related to physics as just like maybe biology or something higher, but where the professor from the very beginning scene that got his head cut off, they take his decapitated head and they're like, oh yeah, like the last thing you see is burned into your retinas. Yeah. And so they like light a bright candle like inside his skull or something and then use his decapitated head as like a projector.
That is a man's head.
Voila.
And blow the image onto like a projector screen, and then they like read the note from the image burned into his retinas to then get like the next like plot point or whatever.
That's what you call die-fi. It's really bad. I'm sorry.
It's 1080D, 1080 die.
Thank you for yes ending me, Zach.
Yes, of course.
We appreciate that.
Of course.
All alone on this little island of bad jokes.
Instead of a projector, it's a dijector.
Oh, God. You were saying, Zach?
That was it,
what
man.
A way to, what a way to get a lead. If it weren't for that.
Yeah, I think it's just supposed to be like kind of funny and kooky.
It achieved that.
I mean, the special effects were pretty fun. The way his eyes lit up and like he turned the head over and everything.
You gotta put that $170 million to work. To its credit, like watching it in 2022, the CG that we see is not that bad.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
I think movies of this era, a lot of the time when they had big special effects budgets, like, it looked good when we watched it back then, and then you watch it now, and it's like, oh, God, that is not aged well. But this one, totally serviceable, I thought. Like, good on them. They didn't do too much. They kept it just enough to keep it believable. as believable as this movie is.
Yeah, I was watching the second Matrix, and there's that scene with like the hundreds of Agent Smiths fighting Neo. And at the time, I thought like, oh, this is the coolest thing in the entire world. But the special effects for it haven't really aged very well. It kind of looks like a PlayStation 2 video game or a PlayStation 2 cutscene.
We're having the same thought. Katie and I watched all three Matrix movies leading up to the release of Resurrection.
Same.
And didn't hold up super well. He really lost some resolution whenever he got up in the air. Did y'all have any particular scenes or moments that you wanted to talk about that you really loved or hated? We could start with love, then go to hated.
I think my favorite is that scene I mentioned earlier that my friends had memorized when, I think it's when James West is first introduced to Loveless, and they're making that back and forth between the two of them. I think Kenneth Branagh should have won an Oscar for that, the way he enunciates in his southern accent.
He's Irish,
yeah,
right?
Was it just me, or was his accent kind of like varying in strength in different scenes?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. In fact, I think he himself touted that it was maybe the worst American accent done by a British actor ever.
Irish.
Like his words. Irish, yeah.
Are y'all allowed to put an audio from the movie into this podcast?
Oh, I do all the time.
I was trying to remember that scene I was talking about. I think it starts off with Loveless telling James West. He starts off, "Mr. West, so kind of you to show up and bring some color to this, to these monochromatic proceedings." Just insert in that whole section there, and then James West talks about keeping in touch with half the people you know. That's the way with pretty women. Raise you up 1 second, cut the legs out from under you the next. I think the audience will really appreciate that.
I will put in as much of that as I feel is safe.
So all of it.
Don't you worry, Jim. Don't you worry. I personally really liked the scene where West disses Artemis Gordon's like fake breastplate. When I say breastplate, like his drag breastplate thing that he wears.
Oh yeah.
And then they go through back and forth like, "Oh, we're here, the buckwheat, it's a problem." And then James West is like, "Well, here, I can fix that for you." He fills it with water, and they're both just like touching the little pouch back and forth, and the conductor of the train is listening in.
"Touch them.
I'm not touching those things.
What are you afraid you're wrong? Touch my breasts. Just one. Touch one."
I thought that was great.
I got really strong Austin Powers vibes watching that.
Oh, yeah.
Austin Powers heavily relies on that trope of like Dr. Evil's henchmen watching Austin Powers do like obscene looking shit behind like a tent with Mini-Me or whatever. But yeah, that scene was great. For me, I guess what, like, there are a ton of scenes that I really liked, but I guess I'll mention the one that really drew me in and made me feel like, okay, this movie is actually like definitely going somewhere, at least from an entertainment standpoint, was, I think it was maybe like the fourth or fifth scene, but it's when Jim West is invited to the White House. And it was kind of a cool establishing shot where he's on the National Mall and he's like riding his horse towards the White House. But he meets the president. It comes to be known that the president that he's meeting, Ulysses Grant, isn't Ulysses Grant. The real Ulysses Grant walks into the room. And when he does, the imposter, who turns out to be Kevin Kline's character, starts like very quickly and kind of flusteredly like taking off all his little disguises and stabs himself in the gut to get rid of all like the whoopee cushion like gut he's given himself. That was when I was like, okay, this is actually going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, Kevin Kline, I think, is a great physical actor in that way too. Like when he does the fake kung fu on the train whenever...
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, and he hits the button. Another one I would like to give an honorable mention to is whenever they first see the spider, Artemis Gordon once again impersonates General Grant, tries to get him out of there, and James West climbs up the leg of the spider, and he gets up to the top, he pulls himself over, and one of Lovelace's like henchwomen is just right there with a gun.
"I got a telegram for Dr. Loveless.
from his mother, Irene. She told him, come on home, stop all this foolishness.
Like, that was just so great. And Will Smith is very good at delivering silly lines like that, and I love it.
Yeah. That just reminded me, one scene that I was expecting but didn't get was right after the scene that I mentioned when they left the White House. They were going to get on the Wanderer, their train. And this kind of also helped to establish like how different they are of personalities. Will Smith got on his horse. Gordon got on his like steampunk-powered 1800s like bicycle with like a huge wheel in the front and tiny little wheel in the back. And I literally said out loud, Chekhov's bike. Like, I was like, that bike is going to come back and be in some other major scene in the end. And it never did. I really hoped it would make an appearance because that thing looked awesome.
What are you talking about? It was totally there.
What?
Yeah, didn't they fly on it at some point?
Yeah, he adapted the jet bike to be the flying machine.
Oh, I may have tuned out for a second. I remember seeing the plane, but I didn't know where the heck it came from. So that was the bike originally.
Speaking of where the heck things came from, I think it's whenever they get captured by Loveless and they get the collars put on them and stuff, and they make it back to the train the first time. They just suddenly have horses. Did y'all notice that? Like, where were the horses? Is there like a little stable car on the train?
I don't know. I may have, you know, hand-waved it away and said, I won't worry about that.
That train is a wonder. It has all those contraptions, and it is the plot hole filler.
I'm going to crack open a beer. Do I need to do anything about the noise?
Do it right into the microphone.
I'm going to do it over here.
We kind of lean into the cracks.
Is there anything you guys really did not like about this movie? For me, one of the biggest things I didn't like about it was that... was Salma Hayek's character.
I was just about to say, I feel like she was very underutilized.
Yeah.
And could have been used a lot better and made more integral to the plot. And I think the movie would have been better for it.
Very oversexed and underused.
Yeah. Immediately swooning for James West when he's done nothing except like enter the room.
Well, she's just playing them, right? Because she just wants them to... rescue her much older husband.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say that there were a couple of 90s tropes in this movie, or maybe just tropes in general. We do have a rooftop fighting scene, but it's a train roof, so I don't know if it counts.
I think it counts.
I think it counts too.
And then there was also the bulletproof vest trick.
But it was fucking chainmail.
Yeah. It was chainmail.
I imagine that would be much more lethal than Kevlar would be.
I mean, he would definitely have a pretty gnarly wound from that, I think.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Here's a question. I have chainmail.
You got the dishwasher,
it's like a 3-inch by 3-inch square piece of chainmail for like scraping and cleaning my cast iron pan. It's not uncommon. Like, I've had maybe like probably 5 to 10 of those links fall out over the time I've had it. And like, they'll get fucking stuck in the dishwasher or garbage disposal and everything. I imagine a bullet would dislodge a couple of them, maybe even break through. Is it possible? Like, how realistic is it that chainmail would even stop a bullet?
If it was well made and all of the joints were like welded shut, then I think it would probably stop the bullet, but it would also
Did they have welding in the 19th century?
I mean, brazing.
I blacksmithing and stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah, forge welding. I mean, forge welding every link of a chainmail shirt would be insanely time-consuming. But they also would do rivets. You know, you punch a hole in each side of the ring of chainmail and you stick a rivet through it. You know, that wasn't uncommon.
Also, aren't the bullets...
Mythbusters, if you're listening...
much weaker back then.
Yeah, the bullets were much weaker. They were just lead, no full metal jacket or anything. So I think that whenever Gordon said like, we'll stop any modern bullet or whatever, modern bullets were still like lead balls. So
yeah,
there's a chance it might have actually helped, you know?
To discredit my argument more, I don't know why all the physics problems with this movie, I highlighted that one. But
you chose the most believable physics problem to have a gripe about.
Yeah. Here's one that, like, happened multiple times that I, like, every time I was like, okay, I'll just forget about it. I remember telling you specifically, Mitch, a couple weeks ago, I tried watching A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
And had to turn it off because of all the, like, first of all, it wasn't really that fun of a movie, I thought, from the get-go, even with the great cast. So I couldn't look past all the physics problems that were just, like, taking me out of the movie. But here I was able to. But the one that kept happening that I was looking past with some effort was people kept, like, getting catapulted into specific parts of the train car.
Yeah.
And it happened to Will Smith first, and then it happened to Salma Hayek's character, I think, twice. And they were, like, landing in, like, different parts of the train car.
I think it only happened twice, once to Salma Hayek, once to Will Smith, and they landed in the same armchair both times, didn't it?
Oh, was it the same armchair?
The physics issue is that the train is moving forward, the platform launched them straight up into the air, and then they moved, like, 50 feet forward into the train before they landed.
I mean, presumably... Maybe the thing isn't launching them straight up, but if they're moving at the same speed, they're not turning, and it's actually launching them forward, maybe that is, you know, plausible that it could land them in the same place twice.
I think implausible, because to put the angle on the body that you would need to get it that far forward on the train, you would hit the, like, back of the train. Because it was at the caboose. Like, they both presumably... entered via the caboose. They, like, climbed up that back rail, landed on a platform on the back of the train, and it launched them forward at, like, a, I don't know, 40 degree angle, it would have to be to get them that far forward.
So, also, the other thing is there are two people of very different masses. Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
Consider the physics.
Indeed. If only Hemender were here.
If only. We got to have him on for something. Okay. Do you want to have any, like, anything else I want to talk about before we move into the, like, true hero and stuff? Any other scenes, comments, gripes, praises, trivia?
Ooh, let me look at my 7 notes.
Oh, well, we should probably just mention that this movie obviously went to the Razzies. It was nominated for 8 different things, and it won 5 of them.
Wow.
They also did a lot of, like, test audiences, you know, with all the rewrites. I guess they weren't too sure about what they were doing, and they ended up doing a bunch of very expensive reshoots to inject more comedy into it, including, like, the final fight scene with the Mr. Knife guy and the dude who's got, like, the metal cranium and all that. That was all added after the primary shooting was done, because it was apparently weird that Artemis and Wes were just, like, fighting all of Lovelace's women henchmen and just them. So they added in those guys after the fact.
I think that was a very worthy addition, because you get another one of the great puns after he knocks that the guy with knives for hands. Will Smith says, what is it? No more Mr. Knife Guy.
No more Mr. Knife Guy.
What I actually really enjoyed from that was the, like, that knife hands guy did his little, like, flourish with his knife hands, and then Will Smith busted out his shoe knife and then just did, like, a little foot dance to, like,
just, like, wiggled it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. That was a really fun action scene. Those are some henchmen, actually. Maybe we should talk about them.
I was wondering. I was going to bring up henchmen stuff, but that's a good point. So, Jim, I hadn't thought of any henchmen.
We have come up with something we call our henchman tier list. We like to talk about the henchmen of the various villains. And when we did our retrospective episode, we took, like, our favorite henchmen from each movie that had them, and we rated them on a, like, tier list, like, you know, S to F. And so if there are henchmen of note, we wanted to talk about them. And I think it's safe to say that Lovelace is a villain who employs henchmen. That's how he gets shit done. He has, I don't know, 6 or so Slavic women in his employ. There's, like, a translator one. There's a lip reader one.
Scream, scream, help me. Do not pull my
arm. Isn't the lip reader called, like, Lippin Reader too? Like, Mrs. Lippin Reader?
I never caught that. Okay.
Yeah.
So Miss Lippin Reader informs me.
The only one whose name I remember is Munisha.
Oh yeah, Munisha, his favorite.
Munisha!
maybe it's only three of them, but
yeah, there's another one, but I don't want to spoil it because I feel like we'll be getting to her later. I want to raise some anticipation.
Sure, but then he had all these random like steampunk sub bosses.
Yeah, cyborgs
in the belly of the spider. Yeah,
sub-bosses.
There was Mr. Knife Guy who literally had two knives for fists, like big, like 18-inch knives on each arm. There was the kung fu guy with the weird eye.
Yeah, is he the one there who didn't have a dick because it had been replaced with metal parts? And like,
no,
Will
no,
Smith
no,
tries to. Yeah.
No, that's the dude with the metal cranium.
Okay.
That was the last guy. That was the big sub boss. But yeah, so first it's the knife guy. Then it's the dude who has, he just has like a shovel. That's all. He just has a shovel.
Yeah.
And he has like a spike through his head. And then there was a dude who just like knew jujitsu or something.
Hey! I learned that from a Chinaman.
And then at the very end was the guy who had like the top part of his skull missing and there was metal there instead. That's another really fun little scene because he punches him in the face and it hurts his fist. He punches him in the gut and it hurts his fist. Then he kicks him in the balls and you just hear like metal rattling around. And Will Smith looks up and he's like, no.
Yeah. Of course, all the little sub-bosses came one by one, like in mm-hmm. order.
You know, you have to get to a checkpoint each time. But they were, you know, relatively effective. The problem is they didn't have enough screen time.
Yeah, there should have been an extra 5 minutes interspersed throughout the rest of the film building up like how evil and bad they were, just murdering like civilians and U.S. soldiers. And then when Will Smith conquers them at the end, it seems more...
It's more satisfying.
Yeah. Perhaps it's not too late for a prequel where we really dig into the origins. Like we can see these guys before they become cyborgs and then learn how they became like Knife Guy, No Balls, and the third one.
Dude, I'm actually into that. And you could also do the thing with the whole backstory of like New Liberty and the massacre there and stuff they talk about a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
That I feel like you could make a better Wild Wild West movie with the prequel of Wild Wild West.
I think you can make it a trilogy, put in a prequel and a sequel.
What's the sequel? Loveless survived the fall off the canyon and he has no arms now?
I was thinking it'd be a lot like Men in Black 2, where it's basically just the same movie over again. I even say just bring in, just in case Kenneth Branagh doesn't want to do the part again, bring in a new Confederate general who has an even bigger spider, and you call this Confederate general... Love Least.
He has an even crazier facial hair.
Oh my God. His facial hair was diabolical.
It was. I imagine in the first, like the prequel to this movie, the Liberty Massacre, he has like just a regular goatee. And then afterwards, there's like a self-introspective scene in the mirror with Loveless where he's like creating some diabolical goatee design after what he's done.
Yeah, that's perfect.
You can really see when his psyche just broke.
Yeah, and he became the Joker. And there should be a lot of scenes of him talking about how much he loves his legs, how he hopes he never loses them.
He does squats every night before
dances.
Bed. He's a tap dancer and a foot model.
All his hobbies are leg based.
Yeah.
It just really it explains his real hatred for the, you know, the union.
Oh, one interesting thing to mention is when President Grant was kidnapped by Dr. Loveless, there was that kind of fun scene where he was driving the final nail in to kind of commemorate the railroad, and it kept like popping out and falling over.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And after like three times where it popped out, he turns around and looks the same direction the crowd is looking, and there's a giant 80-foot spider like 200 yards away. And it was really cool, like, zoom out to show the giant spider.
Mm-hmm.
But how the fuck did it sneak up on them? Like, everyone's looking in that direction, and nobody was like, "Ah, oh, it's a giant spider!" Everyone's just like, is watching him.
That's a good point, man. That's a really good point. I don't know, but I will say that I did kind of love the, like, railroad spike rattling out of the hole.
Yeah, it was like Jurassic Park. It was that scene where you see the water, vibrations in the water.
I was going to ask if y'all feel like, do y'all feel like this was kind of the beginning of what we saw in the early 2000s of some really shitty, over-the-top action movies? Like, this one, I think, would have fallen into the trap of just being unwatchable if it wasn't so much fun.
What makes it so much fun, though?
I don't know. That's the thing. Maybe it's Will Smith with Kevin Kline. Maybe it's...
Yeah, I think it works because they kind of play up the comedy. Like, if that's true that they had to go back through and add more jokes and kind of play up that tone, I think it was a successful edit because I think it's what makes the movie work.
I tend to agree. I think it's the direction. This is maybe a hot take, but I think it's also partly Will Smith. Like, I think if this was a movie from 2004, Jim West would have been like Vin Diesel, and it would have just not worked. Because it would have been like, look at how badass this guy is, and not like made him like a kind of funny version of James Bond.
Yeah, I think it's something that, while it is objectively terrible, I think it's so very enjoyable. And after going through all this with you guys, I'm kind of wishing I'd done my dish a little bit different, but see what we think about it.
So yeah, let's transition to the next segments, which, should we start with our guest?
Yeah, so we kind of already did. Did you like it? Do you just want to go straight to True Hero?
Mitch, why don't you posit the question?
So True Hero is the segment where we talk about a character in the movie that stood out to us in a way that just was memorable. It could be like a quirky, out of left field side character. Pretty much anybody but the main cast, I think. Jim, do you have somebody that you felt like was the true hero of this movie in that they did some heavy lifting for you in one way or another?
Yeah, I'm going to give that up to Miss East, who I believe mainly exists so that Loveless can make a this joke when he sees James West and Miss East talking together. He says something along the lines of, East meets West. And I think that's the entire point behind her character, but it's well worth it.
So this movie did one of those things with nostalgia where I'd seen it a lot of times when I was really young, and so I could almost anticipate the scenes that were coming right before they happened. I remembered her and Jim West having like a badass fight scene, but it didn't happen. I specifically remember that she caught him snooping and then got all sensual with him, and then it was like a pretty intense, like, she's doing a bunch of kung fu and he is, you know, doing his cowboy kung fu back, and then ends up on top. But she pretty much was like, "Hey, I caught you snooping," and then she just gets shot by the dude in the wall. Like,
it sounds like Mitch dreaming.
False memory, yeah. I'm guessing I'm the only one with that.
There's a podcast I listen to where they're always talking about one of the hosts misremembers a scene from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles where he, I think, I don't know which turtle it is, but they bite into a manhole and then, like, all their teeth, like, crack and shatter. But that's, no such scene exists.
Yeah, I guess maybe we switched to a different universe at some point, and where I come from, that scene happened, Jim.
Maybe it just happened in like Shanghai Noon or some other similar movie, or another movie with Will Smith or Austin Powers. Yeah.
I think it's a great true hero, Jim.
It is.
I think Miss East was super fun. Zach, what about you, man? Who is your true hero?
Boy, mine is probably should be a time code true hero, but I don't have the time code. But it's tied to a scene that's pretty easily found. We could have brought this up earlier, but maybe one of the greatest villain intros of any movie, which is the scene where they're at like the party in New Orleans. The giant bust of Abraham Lincoln is like wheeled out and then it explodes as if he was like shot. And Dr. Lovelace like wheels out from inside the remains of the exploded head. Right when it explodes, it cuts to like some crowd reactions. There are two guys actually dressed up in like color guard type regalia. It was all white with like gold stripes on it. One of those guys looked just like Ringo Starr. And I think the fact that he was like a Sergeant Pepper's kind of outfit really helped. But he had like a kind of bowl cutty looking thing, a little bit long in the back. The handlebar mustache, it was uncanny. And I literally thought it was Ringo Starr. I had to go back and look, watch it twice to double check.
The extra but had a Ringo Starr cosplay that he specifically wore.
That extra gets my true hero for, I guess, like being cast for maybe like, hey, that looks kind of like Ringo Starr.
Nice.
Who is your true hero?
So my true hero is also fairly obscure. And it's going to tie in, I guess it'll tie in a little bit with our part of our Marin at the spider Nazi convention. Whenever Lovelace has kidnapped the president and he has everybody, like all the world powers who are in on making this new nation are there, and he's showing off, he has like the big band in there, the orchestra, and whenever he comes out, the band is playing their like intro song, and the song cuts very quickly, but there's one guy, the Glockenspiel guy, Glockenspiel being like the vertical chimes, and he just hits these three resounding notes, and you can see him too because he's like off the side of the band in the frame. He just hits these three notes, and I just thought that was great. I was like, man, this guy is really giving it his all playing for this psychotic man who's hired him in the middle of the desert in this orchestra.
Admirable true hero, Mitch.
Oh, I don't think it's admirable, but he certainly nailed his solo, which is admirable. His solo of ding, 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 ding. Well, those are all super fun. I also learned today what a Glockenspiel is.
Well, with our true hero out of the way, I guess this brings us to our next segment, part of the namesake of our podcast title, which is the dish segment, which is where we come up with a dish of food that in some way resembles the movie to us, whether it's symbolic or metaphorical, or it's very fluid, honestly.
Yeah, super subjective.
Yeah, but in movies, you know, evoke a certain feeling or thoughts or from people, and much the same way that food does. And so that's kind of where we're getting at with this segment of our podcast. So I'll stop rambling about the genesis of the dish segment and ask Mitch. Or no, we'll start off with our guest again.
Start with Jim. Let's start with Jim.
Yeah.
Let's put him on the spot. He said he didn't have a dish when we started, so maybe he's got one now.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot off the dome. You're asking me what dish this movie is, correct? Like, if this movie was a dish, what dish would it be?
Yes, we are very excited to hear your answer.
My answer is, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this as the podcast was going on, I'm going to go with a burger called A Good Manchego Is Hard to Find. I've been working my way through the Bob's Burgers cookbook, and this is a burger.
Oh, nice.
I think it's a burger. The patty's just seasoned with salt and pepper. While you're cooking the burger, you melt some slices of manchego cheese, hence the name, A Good Manchego Is Hard to Find, and you put it on a bun with some arugula below that, and on top, you put fig jam, and then you put the top bun on, and then it's a burger. I remember when I was first cooking it, I looked at all those ingredients and I was thinking, like, oh, this burger is going to be like kind of just weird and gross. It's not going to go together well. Kind of the same way you would think about a like a buddy cop western starring Will Smith and Kevin Klein, especially if you paid attention to the reputation it had as like a big flop. And it's like kind of weirdly steampunk. It's about a Confederate trying to seek revenge against the U.S. You might think, oh, this movie's just going to be like a big, stupid mess. But it isn't. It all comes together perfectly. Like, the arugula is kind of like nice and peppery. You have the nice creamy manchego. A little bit of sweetness from the fig. It all ties together perfectly. And just to complete the analogy, I'd have to say if Wild Wild West is this Manchego burger, then the patty, that's got to be Will Smith. I'm going to say Selma Hayek is the arugula. Kevin Kline is the Manchego cheese. Kenneth Branagh is the fig jam. The bun would be... I'm going to say the bun is also Kevin Kline since he plays two roles. He's Artemis Gordon and Ulysses Grant. Ted Levine is the salt on the burger, and Miss West is the pepper. And the chef, Barry Sonnenfeld.
Miss East?
Oh, what did I say, Miss West?
You said Miss West. Yeah.
Edit that into where I say the pepper is Miss East. I'll give you another reading of that. The pepper is Miss East. The pepper is Miss East.
I thought we just leave that as
I'm leaving it. No. I'm just leaving it just like that. That was great, Jim. Man, you have shown us up already with your dish. Yeah. That was great. Nicely done, man. How's that burger cooked, Jim?
So it depends on how the people want it. I like it kind of like medium rare. Patchy likes it more medium, and then my idiot brother likes it like close to well done.
What if somebody wants theirs well done?
We ask them politely yet firmly to leave.
Yeah. Would that be Earl or Mac?
Earl. Mac is such a piece of shit. He hasn't even come out to help with the baby yet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I just want to say my brother, Mac Naughton Kilborn Wallace, probably my least favorite brother. If you ask me what I'd rather have, like a $20 bill or a brother, and if that brother happened to be my brother, Mac Naughton Kilborn Wallace, I'd probably take the $20 bill.
You heard it here first, Mac.
Mac, you better step up, man. Whew, okay.
Well, Mitch, let's hear what you got, dish-wise.
All right. Okay. So my dish is a story. I know that hasn't been done before, but I was really having trouble figuring out how exactly I wanted to do it, because one of my big takeaways doing the research for this movie was that it would have been something completely different and maybe better, maybe worse, I don't know, had it not been like rewritten a dozen times and then a bunch of extra shooting and comedy and whatnot put into it. So that was the frame of mind I was in whenever I wrote about this dish. In hindsight, I would go back and make it something a little bit more fun, but I'm going to read this to y'all anyway because I think that a lot of people probably feel this way about this movie. So I'm going to set the stage. Imagine owning a suburban home in the mid-1990s. It's summer, finally gotten a bit of time to yourself. You're at home with your young son while your wife is out. It's a Saturday. You've been waiting all week to try out your new grill. You spent the big bucks on a nice cut of Wagyu beef at the Butcher's Mart. So you crack open a cold beer and you start up your grill. The steak is a great cut. It sears nicely as you drop it onto the grates. Sizzles enticingly as you grind some salt and pepper over it. But then you hear the phone ringing inside. You run in the house and grab it. It's your wife, and she's hysterical about something. So you call your son over, and you tell him, "I need you to just go watch my steak for a minute while I take this call with your mother. I'll be right back." 15 minutes later, you hang up the phone, frustrated, and realize you completely forgot about the responsibility you have laid on your young son. He, however, proudly enters the room with your very expensive steak on a plate. It's so well done that it's completely desiccated. But not to worry, he also went into the fridge and got all the condiments and put a healthy helping of ketchup and mustard and mayonnaise on top of it. He also found the sprinkles in the pantry and managed to have the lid fall off and all the sprinkles fall on top of the steak when he was putting them on top of it. "Thanks, son," is all you have the heart to tell him. So this was coming from a point of like, you had something that could have been really great from a critical standpoint, I guess, at this point is how I'm looking at it. And it just got so sliced and diced and overdone and underdone that they ended up with something that is objectively bad in the end.
Mitch, did you hate this movie?
Dude, I actually didn't hate this movie. Like,
I could not eat that steak. I'm just going to be honest with you.
I would probably scrape everything off and take a one bite of it just out of principle, and then throw it away. But like I said, when I wrote the dish, I was coming at it from the standpoint you know, all the rewrites and shit that happened to make it a completely different movie than it otherwise would have been.
Oh, fair. Okay.
This has made me remember what I was going to ask you guys. Do y'all think that us in our frame of mind now and us as kids make us really love this movie versus the critics and adults in 99? I mean, yeah, I watched it as a kid. It was really fun for me as a kid. I don't know that they were really making the movie to appeal to children. You know, it's PG-13, so I guess you could argue that. But do you think that it's like us being millennials and our outlook on the world and society make us like the movie more? I this is a really zoomed out question, I know, but I don't know. It got a lot of flack. I mean, it had like, it won 5 Razzies. It has a 16% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
But it's such a bundle of fun. So like, we love it for what it is. We recognize how much fun it is. Most people feel about it the way that this dad probably felt about his steak.
I do wonder if it's a boomer versus millennial thing.
Yeah, their brains are just so shriveled up and dead, they couldn't appreciate it. They've got nothing to look forward to in life except the release of the grave and oblivion. They just weren't in the mood to see it. I kind of see where you're getting at, Mitch. But no, I think people say similar things about like Hook, that Steven Spielberg movie with Robin Williams, and also Space Jam, about how they're just like some of the worst movies. But for those of us who watched it as kids, you're just like, oh, those movies are awesome.
I guess the nostalgia's, the rose-tinted like sort of take is maybe what makes it that way for us. Do you think that that's the biggest factor?
I don't know if it's the biggest factor, because I've watched it within the last decade. I think it holds up very well. I think it maybe part of it may have also been the expectations too, but like this huge, like big budget movie starring Will Smith, who at that point hadn't had too many misses in his career. Maybe they were expecting it to be more than it was, or to be something different than what it was.
Oh yeah, because Bad Boys was a real hit.
Yeah,
I think it actually was.
I think it was. Like, I can't remember what the contemporary consensus was on it, but I think it was fairly positive.
That's a great point. I mean, if people are going into it with high expectations, and then, you know, we're going into it with 2 decades worth of slander, our bar for enjoyment is very low. That's probably a huge factor too, is like perceived enjoyment.
I mean, either that or we're just way less mature than the generations before
God,
us.
I think that is something. I wonder how much of it is like, I don't want to say revisionist history, but like whatever it is where it's like quasi-historical, but there's like science fiction kind of injected all over the place. I wonder if that has something to do with it too.
Like, I know, like that genre?
Like the steampunk part of it?
Well, just in general, like my parents, I know, like they do not jive with like science fiction stuff very well. Like,
oh yeah, that's a really good point.
Anything that's not like believable in the like current physical realm, like they just tune it out and they're just like, this sucks. I can't get with it.
Mm-hmm. And now for us, like Star Trek is mainstream, you know?
Yeah.
It's like 4 different Star Trek shows going right now.
So I wonder how much of it also was like people going into it thinking it'd be like a straight up and down like Wild West action thriller or whatever. And then they get like all this other steampunk bullshit mixed in.
That's a really good point, man. I think you're probably getting warmer there with the real reason why it did so poorly. Because I think that if this movie was released today, it would probably get a much better reception, at least in America. It doesn't take itself seriously, and we find that really fun, versus back then it was like, you know, you've seen the 60s TV show.
And it could also be people don't really like seeing Westerns anymore. Like, this was a little bit of a disappointment in the box office. I think Cowboys and Aliens was too. I think, what was that Johnny Depp one where he's the Indian, Lone Ranger? That kind of flopped.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've been trying to like resurrect Westerns quite a few times over the past 30 years, but it never, I think since Tombstone, it hasn't really worked in the box office at
least.
Never
stuck.
Yeah. So it could just be the people who cared about Westerns are like dead and gone, and they're not coming back in numbers enough to make a Western box office smash.
Man, Jim, your just off the cuff movie knowledge puts us to shame. So we've gotten a little bit off topic, but it's been a good conversation. Zach, though, I would like to hear what dish you think.
Let me interject before and give Zach a little more time to think of whatever his answer is going to be. I just want to complete my analogy. I just want to add, I forgot the spider. The spider is the frying pan, and the knife guy, the cyborg steampunk people, they're the spatula. And I think that completes the ensemble.
Nice.
All right.
That's maybe the most complete dish we've ever had.
Truly. We've never included the utensils before.
Right.
Nicely done, Jim.
Yeah.
Zach, what about you, man? What culinary dish is Wild Wild West for you?
Wild Wild West for me is a really good fruitcake.
Fruitcake?
Fruitcake. So...
I hate fruitcake.
Yeah, I was about to say, a really good fruitcake's an oxymoron.
Yeah, it doesn't exist, Zach.
Much like many people feel about this movie.
Yeah, true.
How can you say Wild Wild West is a good movie? I feel like that's the consensus on the movie, and that feels like the consensus on fruitcake, too. But let me make a positive case for fruitcake. Have you guys ever had homemade fruitcake or store-bought?
I've had homemade fruitcake.
Have you?
And store-bought fruitcake.
Okay.
Yeah, I've had the both.
I will admit that homemade fruitcake is substantially better.
Yeah, store-bought fruitcake is generally like, in my experience, I've had maybe 3 or 4 times, very few. It's like a nasty brick of junk. It's just like all the shit they didn't want in like the bakery factory or whatever. But I had a homemade fruitcake, I think once or twice. And I don't even remember what the hell was in it, but I remember it was moist. It was like savory and sweet at the same time. And there was like warm icing to put on top of it that was really, really good. It was just like this moist, delicious, seasonal thing, which Wild Wild West isn't seasonal, but like it was like this thing I've always heard was terrible and so bad. But then I had it and I was like, this is actually like delicious and heartwarming and a great dessert. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, Wild West, I was going into it thinking, like, this is going to be terrible, like, there's going to be some fun parts, whatever, but, like, I feel like it gets a really bad rap, even though it's a really, really, really fun movie. And for me, that is my experience with fruitcake.
It's the unicorn fruitcake.
Very much so, yeah. I don't even remember where I had this fruitcake. I just remember having it one time, like, having my hair blown back.
Wow. Man, I want to try that fruitcake. Sounds amazing.
The icing was probably part of the key. The warm icing.
You gotta get that warm icing all over your fruitcake.
I think Mitch was pausing there because he wanted someone to make the connection between warm icing and semen, which is also apparently the last name of that producer, which is also another word for cum. I saw Mitch waiting in anticipation, but I knew the audience wouldn't be able to see Mitch's face, so I had to explain everything for him. Mitch was trying to make an allusion to ejaculate, just so we're all on the same page. That's what he was going for there. It's very funny. I appreciate that, Mitch. Thank you, but we can all move on now.
Oh my God. I just wanted to follow up all of that after wiping my tears away. Jim, your humor is so dry that it makes me cry. Wild Wild West, if nothing else, is entertaining from start to finish. On the entertaining scale, it's like a 9.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster with thrills, chills, and spills. I was looking up the score on Letterboxd, and it's a 2.1.
Out of 10?
Yeah, 2.1 out of 5, but I slapped a 5-star on there to fight the good fight.
There you go. I'll have to get on there and assist that rating.
Yeah, on the entertainment scale, I'd probably also give it a 9, honestly. It drives a hard bargain for entertainment. Honestly, this might be like, if there was a ratio of expected entertainment to received entertainment, this is like off the charts.
Totally agree. Also, Salma Hayek looked great. This isn't going in the pod, but just, you know, as guys,
when I was in the theaters, I was like, my eyes popped out of the head and I turned into a wolf and I was going like, ah, woo, daddy likey.
Okay, I take it back. Is this staying in?
No.
She was abreast of fresh ass.
You said ass. No, I didn't. I said it's nice having her on board. She's abreast of fresh air.
Yeah, she was. Sadly, that's all she was, though, because, again, they just did not give her enough to do, and she would have handled whatever they gave her.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if y'all watch 30 Rock, but she dates Alec Baldwin's character in that for a bit. I think she can do comedy very, very well. Her character just seems like more of like an afterthought. Like they're just like, ah, we need to have some kind of female actress in here to like try and appeal to more women. But they didn't actually like put any effort into it.
Is that what it was, Jim?
I feel.
Is that what it was? Or was it more so that they wanted a large breasted, mostly exposed woman for the men to come watch it?
I feel like maybe the initial note was, we should have a female perspective. And then the person processing that note was like, yes, but we also need huge breasts for the men. And that ended up being the final note.
I think it was the only note, yeah. Jim.
No, I'm sure.
This was 99.
They had the best of intentions.
Yeah, no doubt. We've had a few debates on here about the proclivity for 90s movies to be a little insensitive for gender roles.
Yeah, that's probably pretty fair.
Oh, yeah. I may have been a little bit, like, in retrospect, a little too harsh on the Fifth Element.
Oh, you think? Maybe just a little? Just a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, just a little bit.
You know, maybe just a little bit, because the perfect being was a woman. All right, so it is time to figure out what movie we're going to do next. And the way that we're doing this is with a connection to this movie. So any suggestions? Jim, you're our guest. I see you have...
Yeah, I mean, this is a very easy one because it shares a director and an actor. You could do Men in Black.
Oh, shit.
Men in Black is a fun one.
Is that 90s?
Yeah, it's 90s. It came out before this. 99. I think even Men in Black 2 is also 90s.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm fucking down. Zach, are you down?
I am down. However, I'm looking at Ted Levine. Ted Levine's filmography. He has some 90s powerhouses.
Oh, yeah?
Specifically a movie from 95.
Which is?
Heat.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
I haven't seen Heat.
I haven't either.
Ah.
Ooh.
I've seen Men in Black, of course. I love Men in Black.
I haven't seen Men in Black in ages. I hardly remember it. I just remember that Tommy Lee Jones is also in it.
I actually remember Men in Black fairly well.
Yeah, you could go from Men in Black to Batman Forever.
Jim's just going to give us a whole lineup here.
Shortest path to Face Off?
Much, much, much later.
So, Zach, how do you want to determine which way we go? Do you want to...
Yeah, so our choice is basically like Heat or Men in Black, and it boils down to like, do we want a straight up and down action-only movie, or do we want to have our midlife crisis dish on a similar style as Wild Wild West, where it's like action but comedy and a bunch of fun stuff injected throughout?
I don't know. What makes a better pod, I guess, is the question.
I don't know.
I've never seen honestly. Heat.
I've so never like, seen Heat either, so I kind of want to
I have
see
the feeling
it.
Heat is a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
And it's not hard. Like, it's not impossible to do a pod on a good movie, but it's harder to make fun of.
Yeah, I think you'd have more to work with Men in Black, if you just want my two cents as the third host.
Right. I would also argue that Men in Black is more well-known than Heat.
You're probably right on that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not going to say that Quigley Down Under is super well known as our first episode of this podcast. Most people who I ask about it have never heard about it. So
yeah,
I think my vote is Men in Black.
Okay.
Zach, you could vote and Zach could be our tiebreaker, or Jim could be our tiebreaker.
Yeah, and I haven't signaled how I'm going to vote, so it could be there could be some suspense if you vote for Heat.
I'll vote for Heat. I'll be the opposition here.
All right, Jim, it's up to you, man.
Yeah, Heat, Men in Black, Heat, Men in Black.
Wow, what power we've given you. We get to choose our next movie.
Right?
Let me, I'm going to do a little research here. 1 plus 2, 3 plus
carry the one.
One, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Men in Black. I think it's just there's more to dig into. Like, I think they're both good movies. I've seen both of them, but I think Men in Black, just because of the premise and the fact that it's,
there's a cockroach in it, right? The cockroach dude.
Yeah, cockroach dude. Yeah, you get Vincent D'Onofrio, who I don't know if it was any other action movies in the '90s, but you could pop off from him too. And nice. Who plays Zed?
Oh yeah,
is it
who's Zed?
You see Men in Black, right? He's like the.
I mean, it's been.
He's the, like, boss of the Men in Black.
Okay,
it's Torn or something.
Rip Torn. Is that his actual name?
Yeah, that's his actual name.
Rip
wow,
Torn.
I just looked it up. Yeah.
It's been a long time. I'm definitely looking forward to watching Men in Black. So is it settled then?
Indeed, it is.
All right. We're on the path to Face Off.
The long road to Face Off through a litany of great 90s movies.
Yeah. Well, we got to thank a few people. Let's firstly thank our guest, Jim Wallace.
Janata.
He's sharing the initials of James West. We appreciate you, man. Thank you for coming and dishing with us. You've been a riot.
Thank you. It's a pleasure of a lifetime. And if there's ever a Wild Wild West 2, we need to do a sequel podcast.
Absolutely. If there are any movies also that stand out in your mind as ones you would like to come and join us again for, let me know.
Yeah, maybe Face Off. Yeah, I'll try and think of what 90s movies I like.
Batman Forever?
I could do it, yeah. I wouldn't mind watching it again to see if it holds up as an adult. I don't think it does. Unlike Wild Wild West.
Well, we also would like to thank our several fans who still listen to The Dish when we have new releases. As of this recording, we have not released the first episode of season 2, but if we keep recording on this schedule, we'll actually have some episodes in the pipe and be able to keep releasing them on a regular bi-weekly schedule. So that's something for you to look forward to.
Indeed. I'll take over from here.
There you go, Zach.
So, yeah, we want to thank our fans for listening.
Yeah. I'm a little buzzy, too.
Did I slur a lot?
You did.
Oops. So, yeah, we want to thank our fans. We also want to encourage anyone that listens to recommend the show to their friends. Give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you use. Apparently, the iTunes platform is like the currency of podcasts. So if you get a chance, go review us on iTunes. Also, if you have any feedback, email us at dishingthroughdecades@gmail.com.
Feedback is most welcome. Most welcome.
Encouraged, even.
Yeah, leave us a review, send us a feedback, tell your friends, and keep listening.
It's the icing on this podcast cake.
The warm icing. I was waiting to see if Jim would make a direct comment, but he didn't. So it's probably a good place to end.
Shall we hit stop?
Yeah, guys, it's been a blast.
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you to Mitch for having me on. I'd like to say thank you to Zach as well. Thank you for having me on. I'd like to say thank you to my wife, Patricia, for always supporting me and everything I do. Thank you to my daughter, Sophie, for supporting me in my podcast endeavors as well. And lastly, thank you to the fans, because without you, this would mean nothing.
Jim, I'm going to loop back and I guess reinforce what we said earlier, which is Sophie should not listen to this until she's 18.
I think we can, all we have to do is tell her that cum means something else. Like it's just icing. It's like cake icing.
You need to plant that seed early, Jim.
Is that another cum joke? I
it was another cum joke.
I didn't want to make that comment, but I'm glad you did it, Jim.
Well, she'll listen to this when I'm dead. It's my legacy. Like, hopefully, I'll be 25. If it happens when she's 8, though, then so be it. She'll have to listen to this podcast and find out who her father was.
Wow. A real man to live up to, Jim.